Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My good friend and colleague, Michael Castleman, is a favorite guest. He's so knowledgeable about sex, so it's not surprising that he's answered more than 10,000 sex questions over his career, and he's still at it. And I'd like to welcome Michael Castleman. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello, Diana. Nice to be on again.
Yes, and I was thrilled because I got to have dinner with you and your lovely, smart, wonderful wife, Anne. Last July, Brian and I had dinner with you and Anne, and it was really a special time. I've only seen you in person a few times over the years at conferences and all of that, so this was really special. And I'm grateful for that. Good. You not only have a wonderful book that we have been promoting this year, because it came out January, and you've been on a couple of times on my show. It's called Sizzling Sex for Life: Everything You Need to Know to Maximize Erotic Pleasure at Any Age. Our colleague, and he's pretty well-known, Dr. Eli Coleman, who is the chair of the University of Minnesota's Human Sexuality Program, he says it's the most practical, authoritative, and comprehensive sexuality guide ever written. I agree with that, and it's been so useful for so many of my clients. And another thing about this book that makes it really unique is that it's evidence-based. I'm looking at your XX in your book, and you looked at research over 70 years. Can you just expand a bit on that, Michael, about how you brought so much research and evidence-based information into this book? Because that must have been quite challenging.
It took 3 years, yes.
3 years.
You know, scientific sex research started right after World War II. And Kinsey published his first studies in the late 1940s, and that opened the door a crack to scientific sex research, which has grown in the number of journals that are out there, the number of researchers who are doing sex research. The field has grown substantially since the 1950s. And you know, all these researchers are out there publishing all kinds of fascinating stuff, almost none of which gets out of the journals, gets out of the academy, out to real people out there in the world. And so my job as a journalist covering sex research and sexuality for the last, you know, almost 50 years, my job has been to translate, to read the research and translate it into journalism so that, you know, regular old Americans can get the benefit of what all these researchers are discovering. And what we find is that, you know, every now and then, once in a blue moon, some sex study does make headlines, but very few, almost never. And that's a shame, because there's a lot of useful stuff being published, and I try to bring that to the public who, in my view, are hungry for good sex information and sometimes have trouble finding it.
Absolutely. And you make it, you use the word translates this research. You do it so well so that it's really understandable. You know, I remember a few years ago, Alan Alda published a book, If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face, was the title. And he had a science program for years on television. Do you remember that? Are you familiar with that program?
Vaguely.
Well, yeah.
Not that
well,
much.
What he found is that he would interview scientists who had all this incredible information and research, And they didn't really know how to talk about it. And so he, Alan Alda, lots of listeners know who he is from MASH days, and he's gone on to so many other things. So he actually had developed a school that would teach scientists how to communicate their information so that people could understand it, because that's so important. Well, you're doing the same thing. You're communicating so people can understand it. You're translating it. The best parts. The best parts that really illustrate some areas of sexuality that we really do need some help with. So I think it's very good. Well, we're going to touch on two topics. First of all, we're going to talk about the miseducation of porn, and we'll start with that. And then we're going to talk about the sexual healings, the health benefits, something that the sex-negative people don't want to talk about, or don't. So we're going to talk about porn and health benefits and the miseducation. Can you start with your list on page, 358, on here's what porn gets wrong, because it's fascinating, but maybe even before that, you should say, start where you want to start, Michael, for sure.
Well,
start where you
want
to start in terms of here's what they get wrong, and that you've described porn as a cartoon, and I think that's a fantasy, and I think that's maybe we need to start with that.
Yes, one of the ingredients of great sex is fantasy. Your thoughts, erotic, mm-hmm. exciting erotic thoughts add to sex. And you don't have to be fantasizing about the person you're in bed with. You don't have to be fantasizing about anything you'd actually like to do in real life. It's just that exciting thoughts raise the arousal level and make sex more fun. And so I believe in total freedom of fantasy. Fantasize anything you want, anytime you want. It's no reflection on you, on who you are, on your mental health. Fantasize all you want, just control your actions. Pornography is a fantasy. It's a fantasy of male sexual abundance without responsibility or relationships. And now in real life, the vast majority of men want to have relationships, and so porn is not a documentary. It's a fantasy. It's a cartoon version of sex. But it's fine to watch cartoons, and it's fine to watch porn. If you watch cartoons, you see one character hits another character over the head with a sledgehammer and does no real damage. Well, everyone knows that that's ridiculous. That's a fantasy. And people don't imitate the fantasies they see in cartoons. The problem with porn is that a lot of men in particular don't understand that it is a fantasy, that it's a cartoon, and they try to imitate it. And when men imitate porn, they get all kinds of sex problems, and their girlfriends can't stand them because porn is very penis-centered, and it doesn't really focus on women's pleasure hardly at all. So the other problem with porn is that pornography has been around as long as motion pictures have been around. Motion pictures were invented in 1895 by the Lumiere brothers in Paris. And by 1896, French filmmakers were making pornography. And pornography has been very consistent in its presentation. If you look at antique porn from the early 20th century, except for the hairstyles and clothing, which there isn't much of, except for that, porn from 100 years ago looks kind of like it does today. So porn has an internal consistency that makes men feel like, well, hey, that must be the way sex is. That's not the way sex is. And so I have a whole chapter in my book that details all of the ways that porn gets sex wrong. For one, in porn, everyone is constantly sexual. In porn, everybody yeah. wants to have sex all the time. And although a lot of men can relate to wanting sex a lot some of the time, nobody wants total sex all the time, but that's what you see in porn. And, you know, in porn, there's really no relationships. Boy meets girl, and they say hello, and the next thing you know, she's on her knees and he's unzipping his fly. Real relationships don't work like that. In fact, even commercials, even sex workers have a little bit more warm-up time than, you know, than they do in porn. Another thing about porn is that there's almost no kissing. Kissing, for a lot of people, kissing is very, very important to lovemaking. In fact, there are surveys to show that many people rate kissing as important to lovemaking as genital play. And many people tell stories about breaking up with possible romantic partners because they didn't like the way they kissed. That's how important kissing is to a lot of people. Well, in porn, there's almost no kissing. I mean, every now and then you see a little bit. But, you know, in lovemaking, I think people should kiss a whole lot and then kiss even more than that. Kissing is wonderful. It's very pleasurable. It's very intimate. It makes you feel very close to your partner. In porn, there's almost none of it. Then possibly most destructive about porn is that every time a guy unzips, out pops a full, hard, enormous erection. Well, I mean, that's possible if you're 17 years old. But for older men, anybody over about 30, that really isn't going to happen. And the way they do it in porn is, first of all, they cast for guys with huge penises. And then beyond that, all those guys pop erection drugs like candy so that they have these, you know, firm erections pop out of the pants. In real lovemaking, that doesn't happen. And the older the man gets, the less likely it is to happen. Of course, the good news is that if lovers kiss a lot, if they touch each other all over, if they savor the pleasure that touch can provide, that after about 20 minutes or so, women get warmed up and men have erections and both parties are ready for genital play. But in porn, there's no warm-up time. Genital play is all there is. It's totally focused on the penis, and it's totally unrealistic.
I want to go back to what you were saying about kissing. I think I read somewhere that from an evolutionary point of view, it started a long time ago because you could kiss somebody and determine their health. And I didn't know that at the time, but I instinctively did because I was 10 before I met my current husband, I'd been a widow for 10 years. And so I was doing online dating both in Los Angeles when I was there and in Seattle, the beginning of the time I was in Seattle 13 years ago, and then 2 years later I met Brian through Match.com. But I went out with a number of different men. And for some of the ones that I thought I might want to do a second date with, I allowed a good night kiss because it told me a lot about his overall skills. And I certainly didn't want a tongue down my throat without any arousal or too slobbery. If the man could maintain soft lips and holding me just so, that told me a lot about the man. So that's why I allowed a goodnight kiss for some of my dates for online dating. This was through Match.com and eHarmony mostly back in those days. And but I have to say, I did have to kiss quite a few frogs before I got my prince, but but I used it as a litmus test.
Yes, well, many people do, and
yes.
And, you know, kissing is really a mystery. We don't really know why. Humans are the only species that really kisses. A couple of bonobos, a couple of higher primates engage in something that looks like kissing. Chimpanzees, bonobos, a few others. But, kissing is sort of unique to upper primates and humanity. And it's not clear exactly why we do it. Yes, you can judge a certain amount of health from it, but all we really know is that people really like it. It's a key element of erotic pleasure, and in its own way, as you were saying, it allows a kind of communication without words. It's a sort of touch, to the extent that massage and touching people can be intensely communicative.
Michael?
Touching lips does the same. The science of kissing is very interesting because what scientists have learned about kissing is we don't really know why people do it. Yes, mm-hmm. You can get a sense of people's, a sense of health and well-being and reproductive fitness from kissing, but really kissing is kind of a mystery, and it's one of those wonderful mysteries of life that is, that's a tremendous gift. So just as touching a lover with your fingertips can communicate a lot of emotion and provide wonderful sensation, kissing your lover's lips with your own does something very similar. And you never see that in pornography. You never see a really romantic kiss. Any kissing is very perfunctory, whereas most people really like to put a lot of their soul into kissing.
You know, when I was a teenager, it was quite different. But honestly, sitting in the car and making out, as we called it, it was almost a religious experience. And we would sit in the car and just make out. And it was so exciting. And of course, I noticed we kept our clothes on in those days. I mean, this was the early 60s. I began to really love kissing, but everybody was so excited and we couldn't do anything about it. But that actually was highly arousing. And people that rush things can maybe lose some of that arousing. Activity.
In porn, there's no warm-up time. There's no warm-up time at all. Boy meets girl, and the next thing you know, they're doing it. In fact, all the research shows that women typically need at least 20 minutes of non-genital warm-up play, kissing, hugging, touching all over the body, to warm up to genital play. And the myth is that men don't need any warm-up time, that guys are just ready to have intercourse, at the drop of a zipper. That is not true.
Not true.
Teenagers can do that, but mature men also benefit tremendously from erotic warm-up time. And kissing is a big part of that, and whole body massage and touch all over is another part of that. Porn just ignores the arousal process and goes right to genital play, which is a cartoon. It's fun to watch, but it's not a documentary. It's not how real lovemaking works.
And, for women, there's a physiological thing that happens. And when you talk about 20 minutes at least of non-genital play, especially for a woman, and she needs to be the one to say when she's ready for penetration. But what happens is that her uterus, when she's excited enough, her uterus lifts up and away from the top of her cervix. And if that hasn't happened, during intercourse, the penis can bump the cervix Yes, and then in turn bump the uterus, and that can be just uncomfortable, if not painful, for the woman. So there are lots of physiological reasons, too, for the warm-up. I'm one lucky girl because on Saturday afternoons, my husband gives me a 40-minute massage that is really a good massage. That I can't imagine better foreplay than that, because already I'm ready for the rest of the evening because of this 40-minute massage. It's just incredible. Now, most couples aren't going to be so dedicated for that, but I do say, please give each other a massage before sex, and you'll have much better sex. You're more relaxed. It's just right. A real easy kind of thing to do. Give each other a massage. Save the genitals for last if you're giving an erotic massage, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people are intimidated by massage. They think, I'm not trained. I don't know how to do it. Well, for one thing, if you want to get a little training, there are a number of videos that are available, and you can just search that on, Professor Google. Beyond that, I would say that you don't need a whole lot of training to give a good massage.
No.
All you have to do is touch people gently and lightly all over their marvelous body. In particular, I would say to men that if you really want to get points, give your lover a foot massage. Oh, my God.
Yes.
5 or 10 minutes on each foot. Just touching it, just rubbing it, just pressing here and there, always asking if it's comfortable or not, because a lot of people have extremely sensitive feet, and some touch can be uncomfortable. But with coaching from your lover, a foot massage can be absolutely sublime and really set everybody up for a very orgasmic lovemaking.
Absolutely, and reflexology is some 5,000 years old, started in China, and so all the points of in the foot that correspond to other places in the body is fascinating. But again, I agree with you. You don't need a lot of training, but it's just that a foot massage is wonderful, and you can get training from online videos. You can also check out. Well, I like Sex Smart Films, Dr. Mark Schoen's. There's so much good sex education there as well, and we do learn so much visually. So there are couples, years and years ago, I remember going to a couples massage class with a former husband, and Brian, too, with his former wife. So you can go to these couples massage groups. Well, probably not with a pandemic, but they used to exist. Probably you can find more training online. But as you say, just slow down and listen for feedback from your partner, and you don't need to be intimidated. You can also get a professional massage and pay attention to what the person is doing.
Right.
And you can learn a lot that way, too. And I do suggest professional massages for people that don't have partners, who are touch-deprived, and maybe even skin-starved. So I think massaging is something incredibly healthy and useful for our sex lives.
Right.
So
the other thing that porn gets totally wrong. Well, the one thing that porn gets right about sex is that the women never have orgasms. If you make love the way they do in porn, the women are not going to have orgasms. And in porn, women almost never have orgasms. That's the only sexually realistic element of porn. Every now and then, the guy goes down on the woman a little bit or rubs her clitoris a little bit, but just not gently enough, not long enough, not lovingly enough to really get any real live woman off. And it's one of the real cartoon elements of lovemaking, of pornography, the other thing I like to do is I compare men often get this when I say that porn is like the chase scenes in action movies. They're fun to watch, they're exciting, and they're fun to watch, but they're not the way to drive. And everybody knows they're not the way to drive because you have to take driver training before you get a driver's license. You have to pass a test that shows that you know how to drive. And you do not drive in a driver's test like they do in the chase scenes in, Clint Eastwood movies or, Van Damme or any of those guys. Porn is the same. Porn is a fantasy. It's like the chase scenes in action movies. You just don't want to make love the way they do in porn because you're going to get it all wrong and the woman is not going to have an orgasm.
Yeah, I love that analogy. So the chase scenes in movies, and yeah, that's great. But it's not the way to drive. You talk about Hollywood also teaches sex all wrong. And this, you were referring, I think, to some of this. You write, only 1/4 of women are consistently orgasmic during intercourse. But since only 70% of men last long enough to allow 25% of the women who orgasm during intercourse to get there, you have Hollywood sex is just not realistic. And there are so many people that still believe that, the only good sex is spontaneous sex. Somehow we will open our arms when we feel the urge and run to the other with all this passion. That's just a total myth. You've heard about this a lot because you talk about scheduling sex, and that's been very useful. That's I've quoted you for years about put sex on the calendar. It's hugely important for mismatch desire, which we're not going to talk about today because we've talked about it before, but we have other things to get to. But isn't that true that we simply should not rely on the Hollywood myth that we're going to feel this spontaneous desire? It's very unlikely with the DINS, double income, no sex relationships, and the TTFS, too tired for sex relationships that are very common these days.
Yeah. Well, Hollywood sex is as silly and cartoonish as pornography. It's just that the camera isn't right up on the genitals. In Hollywood sex, there's very little foreplay, and once there's intercourse, the guy pumps 3 times and they both come. Well, that never happens. I mean, that never happens. And I don't know who these directors are, but it never happens that way. And so that's why do not use pornography or Hollywood films as any kind of documentary on how to make love. It's just a formula for heartache.
I was very good friends with Candida Royale, her real name Candace, and she died 5 years ago of ovarian cancer. I used to, if I go back 25 years, 30 years ago when her films, she was the first, as you know, but the audience, I've talked about Candace before, but she was the first female director, producer to make films for couples to watch. And her films are more realistic because she looked for real couples to portray, and she really did pay attention to female pleasure. So she did not ever have these 3 pumps and the woman will come. She knew better. And so I would, going back to the 90s, I would loan out her videos for couples to watch and learn from. And I've continue to do this, but now I use a little more sex education videos or sex smart films because her films are a little bit dated, but they're still really good because they're arousing and they're fun and there's some education in them, but they're a little more realistic than standard male porn.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there is even some research, university sex research on femme films, the films that Candace made. And consistently, they would show groups of people standard pornography, and then they would show some of Candace's films. And consistently, the women got more off on Candace's film than the standard porn, were much more into making love afterwards, and enjoyed sex more after watching a femme production movie rather than some, you know, standard porn. So, you know, it's very important to men to please women in bed. You know, there's a myth that men just want to get their rocks off and don't care about women. That's absolutely not true. All the research shows that that men judge themselves sexually by how much they can please women. And if you want to please women, you don't want to do it the way they do it in porn. You want to do it more like what you see in femme videos, or you could read my book and get all of the directions necessary to please women, as we've been talking about. Whole body massage, a lot of kissing, and yes, genital play, but later, you know, 20 minutes from now, 30 minutes from now. If you make love while listening to music, give it 5 or 6 songs before anybody reaches between anybody's legs. And everybody's going to be a lot happier and more likely to come.
I love, give it 5 or 6 songs. That's a good measure of time, because that's excellent. I like that so much. Shall we move on to? I know. Before we move on to the healing aspects of sex, I did want to make one comment on how deleterious, how unfortunate, how really harmful it is for boys to look at porn, and now that they can see it on their phones and have access to it. As I understand it, some boys are watching porn as early as 11. Maybe it's even earlier than that. But all the messages they get, and then what are they going to do when they get a real-life partner? So I read that some boys even think it's because they've seen choking in porn, that's something that they want to do. And the girls are just, women, too, just mystified by this. And it's also dangerous. But these boys that are watching porn without any actual experience, that's really unfortunate.
Well, boys are going to watch porn no matter what we do, and we're not facing any kind of public health crisis because of it. But what we are seeing is that men get miseducated about sex from porn. And, you know, guys, if you're out there listening, you want to watch porn, you want to masturbate to it, it's fine. Go ahead. Virtually all men do. But just don't see it as the way you're going to be in bed with a real live woman. Get some real information about real lovemaking, and then you can masturbate to porn all you want, as long as you don't let that invade the bedroom.
Very, very good advice. Well, sex negative people, and there are a bunch of them out there, rarely talk about the health benefits found in the bedroom. And you've got sexual healing in your book. There's so much in Michael Castleman's book, Sizzling Sex for Life, that you really do need to get it. And inform yourself. You can also go to his website, greatsexguidance.com, and I'll put this in the show notes, of course. And also, Michael has a PT blog, a Psychology Today blog. and when you go to his website, greatsexguidance.com, you'll see that he writes that since 2009, his Psychology Today sexuality blog has attracted more than 50 million views. And so you know what that makes, Michael Castleman? We're so lucky to have him here with us today. The world's most popular sex writer. And as I said at the top of the show, he's answered more than 12,000 sex questions from around the world. And he's got, if you go to his website, greatsexguidance.com, you'll see that you can pick a topic and then review the knowledge base, like self-pleasuring, premature ejaculation, desire differences, erection problems, sex and aging, penis size. Oh, my goodness, that goes on and on and on. Oh, well, I wish men would just get over it, but it seems to exist that bigger is better, and it's not true. And orgasm, ejaculation problems. And then also, of course, pornography-related relationship strife, which is what we've been talking about. So I encourage our listeners to go to greatsexguidance.com and check out his Psychology Today sexuality blog, because it's all very interesting. So now let's talk about top health benefits, because it's really true that the road to good health may not always lead to the health food store, the doctor's office, or the pharmacy. It may go straight to the bedroom. Straight to the bedroom. The fountain of youth can be found between the sheets. People are always telling me I look way younger than my chronological years, and I think it's because I have a very active, robust sex life. I know how sex is healing, and I'm so happy about that. What a great way to get exercise and improve your mood. But let's go down your list, because you're at the top of your list, you have relaxation. Can you tell our listeners why this happens in such an efficient way with sex?
Well, I'd love to, and I would just like to say that, you know, years ago, one of my favorite singers, Marvin Gaye, had a hit called Sexual
yeah.
Healing.
Yep, I love the song.
And it's literally true. Sex can be a healer. And one
yes.
thing sex does is very relaxing. Sex, anybody who's had good sex knows how relaxing it can be. Well, it turns out that, according to the best research, more than one-third of Americans are chronically stressed out, anxious, having panic attacks, and they are not relaxed. Now, that is bad for your health. When you're chronically stressed, your body releases the hormone cortisol, and that has all kinds of deleterious, subtle but deleterious effects on the body. And what you want to do is try and live your life in a way that you can relax. And one way to do that is sexually. That is solo sex or partner sex. Doesn't matter which. They're both quite relaxing, and they're both very good for your health. And people who are sex negative, the anti-sex people, they just never recognize this. They never recognize the health benefits of sex. To them, sex is for procreation or to cement holy wedlock, and that's it. That's not it.
Yep.
Relaxation is immensely important. And, you know, how many people in the United States are taking Valium and other tranquilizers because they're so stressed out? Well, maybe if you just got it on a little bit, you could get off the drugs.
Absolutely. I lived in Palo Alto for over 20 years, and so I would frequent Stanford University and lectures. And in the early 90s, I still recall a fascinating lecture by Dr. Robert Sapolsky. And he had written a book at that time, and it was just out, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. And he points out that, you know, we are hardwired to flee or to fight or to maybe to freeze. And a zebra doesn't get ulcers because if a lion's chasing them, they know to flee. But he pointed out that in our day-to-day work, day-to-day lives, we often are experiencing chronic stress. There's no let up of stress, and it affects every part of our body. And I still remember this, including our reproductive capabilities. And you know, I helped produce at that time through the Junior League. I was on this committee for creating a family through adoption, and everybody on the committee had adopted, and then several of them had gone on to have their own child by feeling more relaxed about their sex. They weren't so uptight about, oh, we've got to conceive a baby. And then that's pretty well known in the adoption community, that if you just relax around sex, you're more likely to conceive if that's what you're after.
That's right. And in fact, regular ejaculation for men improves sperm quality. There's research to show that. And
yes.
And it helps with conception. There's research to show that. So if mm-hmm. you want to have children, there's nothing better than a regular exuberant sex life before you start trying to conceive to help your chances. That's another one of the health benefits of sex. Another one is pain relief. Lovemaking releases endorphins, which are the body's own pain reliever. If you have, you know, in the United States, more than half the population has some kind of chronic pain. You know, everyone who's older has some kind of arthritis, and many, many younger people have ongoing pain issues. And the amount of, ibuprofen and Advil and Tylenol that get consumed is mountains of it in this country. Well, some of that may be necessary and some of it may not. If people just enjoyed each other's intimate company a little bit more, sex is pain relieving.
Yes, and I think that, showing that the old, no, not tonight, honey, I have a headache excuse, it's not valid, because intercourse has actually been proven to cure headaches. Maybe not all headaches, but many headaches. And it's also been shown, as you pointed out already, to relieve arthritis pain. There was a Stanford study that showed that being deeply in love has proven to increase overall pain tolerance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, because pain, to some extent, pain is a mind-body experience, and if your mind is focused on a lover and enjoying intimate company, you just don't pay as much attention to your pain. So you may still have it, but you don't feel it. And so that's another one of the advantages, health advantages of regular lovemaking. Another one is sleep. Regular sex sleep better for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that sex is a form of exercise, and exercise improves sleep, and sex is relaxing, and relaxation improves sleep. The research on this is that everyone, compared with people who have very little sex by themselves or with lovers, people who have more sex generally sleep better. This is especially true for men. Men find sex to be very good for sleep. In fact, there's the old joke about the guy comes and he just rolls over and falls asleep. That happens a lot. Now, that's not fair if the woman hasn't come yet. And so, gentlemen, my suggestion is, if you are one of those roll over and fall asleep guys, that you arrange your lovemaking so that she comes first.
Exactly.
And then after she's had her orgasm, then you can have yours and you can roll over and go to sleep. But the point here is that sex is very good for sleep, and this is a mm-hmm. nation of insomniacs. The number of Americans with sleep problems is enormous. And there again, yes, some people do need sleep medication, but many people can get good sleep if they just exercise regularly, like 30 to 60 minutes a day, and that includes lovemaking. And you'll sleep better. Isn't that nice?
Isn't that really nice? And in the process, it's making you happier. I mean, we've known for years that people get a smile on their face when they have sex. And there is some research that and you, I'm sure you covered in your book, the release of DHEA during sex provides a natural antidepressant and mood enhancer. Some studies show that regular sex can be as much as 10 times more effective than traditional prescription antidepressants. And we take way too many antidepressants.
Right.
Not only sleep medications, but antidepressants in this country. Of course, many, many people are legitimately depressed and anxious, and the pandemic has increased a lot of that. But let's stay talking about the benefits, the health benefits of... I really like what you talk about in your book, the longevity thing, because... It's kind of a famous study about you write about it in the English study. The scientists tracked 900 men, and can you talk a little bit about this?
The
longevity of it.
Yeah, well, so relaxation is good for longevity. Pain control is good for longevity. Mood elevation is good for longevity. Fitness, good sleep, lower blood pressure, immune enhancement. All these things are produced by lovemaking, and they are all help with longevity. So these English scientists decided to ask the question, well, does regular sex prolong life? And they interviewed these 900 guys in a town in Wales, and it showed that compared to the men, this is just men, a study of men, compared with the men who had very little sex, solo or partnered, the men who masturbated more and had more partner sex lived significantly longer. And when this study came out, it was it made headlines. It was one of the few sex research studies that really sort of broke out and into the regular news media. And immediately it was attacked by people saying, well, that can't be true. I mean, longevity is a function of overall health, and people who are healthier have more sex. So it's just an artifact of being healthy. And the researchers immediately snapped back and said, absolutely not. We controlled for that. We controlled for health variables. And our results are that it's the sex itself that does improve longevity. And I wasn't surprised, because sex has all these benefits that improve health and longevity. So sex itself should do the same, and it does. So as you said, Diana, this is one of the few famous sex studies, and it's true, it's valid, it's wonderful. If you want to have a long life, have a regular sex life, either solo or partnered, and you're on your way to greater longevity.
I remember when that study was one of the ones that broke through. it was 1999 when that study came out in the newspaper, and I remember living in Hawaii at the time and mentioning that on my radio show that I had there then. And it also talked about men who had two or more orgasms a week had half the death rate of those that had sex once a month or less. And you know, we know that the brain releases HGH, human growth hormone, during intercourse, and HGH helps the body repair itself and maintain youth. And what a fun way to go for longevity. Really is. Connected to that, I just wanted to give one more study that I encountered, although it may be in your book. I've read your book, but not cover to cover. It's a big book, but it is this, that a study at Queen's University found that men who had regular sex cut their risk of heart disease and stroke in half. And and that having sex once a week for a year burns the same number of calories as walking 25 miles. But that's for a year. But still, such cutting heart disease and stroke in half, that's big.
Yeah, and also there's good research to show that regular sex life reduces risk of prostate cancer, which, prostate cancer is as common in men as breast cancer is in women, and it kills almost as many men as breast cancer kills women. Now, there's an enormous amount of social action trying to prevent breast cancer. There's a lot less emphasis on trying to prevent prostate cancer, but guess what does? A regular sex life. And the reason is that the research shows that prostate cancer is, to some extent, infectious. You things get into your urethra and they get up into your prostate, and that seems to increase risk of prostate cancer. But orgasm causes the prostate to contract, and it expels seminal fluid out the urethra, and it kind of cleans out the system. And to the extent that prostate cancer is sexually transmitted or infectious, irregular ejaculations in solo sex or partner sex helps clean out the system and prevent prostate cancer in men.
That's something that I've known, of course, for years, and have suggested this to clients, but lots of people don't, and you make such a good point that we get lots of information about how women can prevent breast cancer, but not so much for men with prostate cancer. And you're saying that men die almost as much from prostate cancer as women die from breast cancer.
Yes. So, the two best ways to prevent prostate cancer are to have regular sex life and eat less meat. And those are the two things that seem to be the most beneficial. But like you said, there's not a lot of social emphasis on prostate cancer. Men don't talk about it that much. It's not, there aren't huge marches in Washington, D.C. to prevent prostate cancer. Well, there are for breast cancer. And I wish there were for prostate, but we don't have that.
Yeah, that really is too bad. You mentioned one more health benefit. Well, you mentioned a lot of health benefits here, but one that as an older woman, and I'm aware of this a little more than I used to be, but I think it's bladder control, and I think my bladder control is better because of my regular sex life. And you write that it must be true, because you say bladder control. Many women suffer stress incontinence, urine leakage while coughing, sneezing, or laughing. The cause is weak urinary sphincter muscles that don't completely close. And, of course, doctors do prescribe Kegel exercises to strengthen them, but orgasms help tone the same muscles. Yeah, orgasm. Yay for orgasms.
Yay for orgasms. Yes.
I was recently seeing a couple. When I say seeing, it's over Zoom, these days. But and she's a woman postmenopause in her 60s, and I had recommended a particular sex toy to her because we were talking about her lack of orgasms, but this was early on in our counseling, and without any warm-up, she tried the toy on herself and didn't have an orgasm. And she reported with tears in her eyes that what happened. I said, you've got to warm up. This is not going to work if you just put the sex toy on and expect an orgasm. this was the new Sensuel. It's got a nice little, it can be a dildo or a clitoral stimulator. But that's so true. We can't expect that we can just put a vibrator on our genitals, and for a woman anyway, and have it give us an orgasm, because we need the emotional connection with our partner. I'm digressing a little bit here, but and we need warm up, and then you can have an orgasm or perhaps several. And the high of an orgasm, there's nothing like it. You are transported into a whole realm. So that's one reason, one of many, that I'm a real sexual cheerleader. I've always been this way, you know, a sex positive, sex cheerleader. And you are too. And it's one reason I really appreciate having you on this program. Words of wisdom, few final words of wisdom for the listeners. Your overall messages have to do with slowing down, but what else?
Well, overall, I think it's very important to listen to Diana's radio show a lot to get the latest on sexuality. I think that, you know, people make a big deal out of sex. They think it's really complicated. They think it's so, you know, fraught with peril. It can be, but generally, sex is just fun. Sex should be like a day at the beach. You know, let yourself go. Let yourself relax. To the extent that people lack sex information, there's all kinds of information out there. You can get all kinds of stuff. I mean, my book is out there, Sizzling Sex for Life. There are lots of other good sex books. And there's a huge network of sex therapists and counselors and educators if you want to learn more about sexuality. The information really isn't hiding. And so if you want to increase your pleasure, you can.
Yes, you can. That's right. The information is out there, and both in written form and then the visual form, the sex education films that I have participated in the past, I think six of them over the years, starting in 1994 by the St. Clair Institute, because we do learn visually. But all the time my message is, sex is play, which is a corollary to sex is fun, and sex toys are adult toys to play with and can be so much fun, the other thing is we need novelty in our relationships, and if we want to be monogamous and in a long-term relationship, we need to think of new things that will excite us so that dopamine can be expressed. Right. And certainly trying new sex toys can be a fun way to bring forth some more novelty. Yes.
Anything new or novel helps sex. You know, everyone knows that sex in a hotel room is more fun than sex in your own bed a lot of the time. Well, because a hotel is new and different. And novelty excites the erotic imagination and releases dopamine, which is the pleasure neurotransmitter. So, yes, novelty, it's one of the 10 ingredients of sizzling sex that I write about in my book. I'm all for sexual novelty. Do something new. Make love in a different way, in a different time, at a different place. Any novelty is good for sex.
Yeah, since I haven't heard the music yet, why don't we go to, you've got your 9 ingredients for really good sex. Can you tell us a few of those? I mean, we've already covered a lot of them in here, but novelty is one.
Touch, massage.
Touch, yes.
We haven't touched on lubrication. Lubrication is essential. You know, a lot of perfectly normal women of all ages don't produce a whole lot of natural vaginal lubricant, and that can make intercourse uncomfortable and sometimes painful and impossible. So I am all for commercial lubricants. Saliva is the most popular one, but also commercial lubricants are a great idea. Another key ingredient of great sex is consent. We haven't touched on that, but of course you have to really say, yes, I want to be sexual with you.
And yes, I want to do another show with you. And I hope that'll be in December. So thank you so much, Michael Castleman. As usual, you impart so much information that's really useful.
My pleasure.
So,
thanks for having
everybody.
Me on.
Thank you again, Michael.
Bye.
Bye.